either if you know you really love sermons, you can either skip out now.
Or you walk out, go to the Kiddush Club.
Right, exactly. I was going to say you can go to Kiddush Club now, or you can go to the Kiddush Club over Shabbos. I won't be insulted. So this year is really kind of an outgrowth. It happens to be this week is my Bar Mitzvah Parsha, Parshas Yisrael. And I would say for the past, I wouldn't say, thank you, yesterday.
February 4th?
February 3rd, but Hebrew is Chav Shvat, so. So this is a question that had been bothering me, I wouldn't say since my Bar Mitzvah, but really for the past, I'd say about 10 years, I've been thinking about this question, and you know, I didn't really get a chance to work on it so much until I had to prepare for a shir, prepare for a drasha. And just a very interesting insight, something that I don't know if most people would have even thought of. We begin with source number one. In this week's parasha, we're introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu's family's extended family. Vayishma Yisrael Kohen Midyan Chosin Moshe. Is called Asher Asa Elokim LeMoshe, L'Yisrael Amo. Hiotzi Hashem Es Yisrael MiMitzrayim. That Yisrael, Moshe's father-in-law, heard everything that God had done for Moshe and to Bnei Yisrael, or that he took them out of Mitzrayim. And therefore, what happens? Vayikach Yisro Chosein Moshe es Tzipora Eishes Moshe achar shilucheha. So Yisro decides to join up with Klal Yisrael in the Midbar. So he takes Tzipora, the wife of Moshe, after she was sent for. Ve'es shnei vaneha asher shem ha'echad gershom ki amar ger ha'isi beretz nachriyah. So now we meet the Rabbeinu family, Moshe Rabbeinu's family, and we are told about his children. His son, his oldest son, his name was what? His name was Gershom. Why? You know, every Bris Mila has a you know little suda, and the father gets up there and explains exactly why they named the son a particular name. So here, this was probably Moshe Rabbeinu's speech in Midian when he, well, he didn't make the, whatever, you know, the story of the Bris, but whatever he gave this speech at a Kiddush, he said, you know why his name is Gershom? Ki Omar Ger Hoisi Beretz Nachriya, because I'm a stranger in a strange land. You know, okay, very nice, it's a nice drasha. I'm sure everyone enjoyed it while they were sipping on their coffee and eating a French toast. Okay, kind of innocuous. But, you know, I started thinking, you know, as I got a little bit older, I started leaning a little bit more. And I came across the very same pasuk a few weeks earlier in Parsha Shmos. In Parsha Shmos, we're told, Vayol Moshe l'sheves es ha'ish, v'yiten es tzipor v'itol Moshe. We're told that Moshe marries into the family of Yisro. And he marries Tzipora, Vatelet Bain. And they have a child, Vayikra es Shemo Gershom, Ki Omar Ger Hoisi Be'eretz Nachriya. Verbatim, the same two psukim, one in Parsha Shmos, one in Parsha Yisro, right? That the Moshe Rabbeinu's oldest child, Gershom, was named Gershom, Ki Omar Ger Hoisi Be'eretz Nachriya. I believe, you know, I've done a little bit of research, so this has been bothering me for a while, I believe this is the only time in the Chumash, and maybe in Tanakh, I didn't check Tanakh, but the only time in Chumash where you find that somebody is given a name, and the reason for that name is repeated verbatim, word for word, exactly the same reason. You know, you find by Yishmael that the Malach tells Hagar that she should name her child Yishmael, and then we see that he names her, that Avram names him Yishmael, and by Yitzchak we're told the story that she laughed, and then they named him Yitzchak, but we're not told he was named X because of this, and that reason is exactly the same as a pasuk. And you know, it's strengthened by the fact that it's a pasuk that was a parsha a few weeks ago. We already know Gershom. We met him parsha Shmos Vayirabo B'shalach Yisro. It's only a few weeks. You know, if you go to the Bris, you're sitting at the Bris. The guy gives you the whole spiel during the speech why he's named you know Gershom, because his great grandfather had a middle name was Gershom, and his aunt's brother was also Gershom, and the gematria equals this, it equals that. So you sat there and you tolerated it during the Bris because that's what happens at a Bris. But imagine you meet this guy, you know, 3 weeks later, and he's pushing his little baby Gershom down the street, and he says, "Oh, this is my little baby Gershom, and I'd like to tell you the reason why I named him Gershom." And you'd say, "Okay, you know, spare me the whole drusha. I just heard it. I heard it 3 weeks ago. You know, I remember your great grandfather, his brother, his uncle, Gershom. Very nice, a beautiful name." So what's the Torah? We know this already. We know it's Gershom. Why do we have to sit through this again? Granted, it's only one pasuk long, but we didn't forget it.
Is that coming from the word Giresh, maybe?
It seems like it's coming from Gershom, that he was a stranger.
He was strange there.
Ki Omar Ger Ha'isi Beretz
Nachriya. That makes sense.
That's what it sounds like. So this question bothered me. Not so many people dealt with this issue. I saw the Or HaChaim HaKadosh deals with this question in Parshas Yisro, and he just says maybe you would have thought it was a different Gershom. So we have to say that it was really the same Gershom. I don't know exactly why you would have thought that somebody switched the children. So it was a different Gershom. I don't understand what that means. So I thought perhaps we could understand based on the following Mahalach. So in source number 3, we have the Or HaChaim in Shmos. This is the Or HaChaim going on the earlier Pasuk, the first time we meet Gershom. And if you skip to the last line, he's dealing with the Or HaChaim. He's dealing with it. He says it's a bit redundant to say, Ki Omar Ger Hoyisi Beretz Nachriya, I'm a stranger in a strange land. Well, if you're in a strange land, you're obviously a stranger. I mean, just because you're a stranger doesn't mean you're in a strange land. But if you're in a strange land, that means you are a stranger. So why do you have to repeat, why do you have to say, Ki Omar Ger Hoyisi Beretz Nachriya, a stranger in a strange land? So in the last line, he says, V'hu Omro Ger Hoyisi Ma'odi. Right, I've always been a stranger, no matter where I am. V'nosaf li be'eretz nochriya, but I'm in a strange land. Letzad shehaya chutz me'achiv umibeis aviv, because I'm removed from my brothers and from the house of my father. Seemingly from the Or HaChaim, he says, you know why Moshe Rabbeinu gave Gershom this name? Because he felt that he missed his brothers. He missed Klal Yisrael. He had a longing for his brothers who were suffering in Mitzrayim. So the name Gershom seems to serve a double purpose. First of all, it helps Moshe remember, whenever he sees his son Gershom, he remembers the suffering of Bnei Yisrael who are right now in Mitzrayim. Again, we're talking about in Parshas Shmos. In Parshas Shmos, when we're told the name of Gershom, because Klal Yisrael are still in Mitzrayim, they're still suffering. So Moshe wants to remember his brothers who are suffering in Mitzrayim. But it's also an educational value. It has educational value to his son Gershom. Now Gershom, whenever he wants to know, why is my name Gershom? Because you should know, Gershom, while we're sitting safe in Midian, living a life of luxury, Yisro was the high priest of Midian, a very powerful man in Midian. And Moshe could say to his son Gershom, you know, while we're sitting here in Gershom, while we're sitting here safe in Midian, you should know that you have family who are suffering in the land of Egypt. They're suffering slavery and hard labor. And I believe this idea, this notion of Moshe Rabbeinu trying to educate his children and trying to arouse some feelings of longing for his brothers and trying to tap into their and connect with their suffering. So that can be seen, actually hinted to in a Rashi in this week's Parsha. I found this to be a fascinating Rashi. If you just look at the implications of what Rashi is trying to say. Rashi says, Vayikach Moshe es ishto ves banav, in source number 4. That Moshe... So he took his wife and his children. Vayetze Aaron lekroso, and Aaron came to meet them. Vayifkesheu b'har ha'elukim, and they met at Har Elukim, Har Sinai, I guess. So this is a medrash. So Amar Lo. So this is the first time Moshe Rabbeinu meets up with Aaron. This is kind of rewinding. We're going back in history when Moshe Rabbeinu was leaving Midian to go back to Mitzrayim to take the Jews out. So the Medrash is talking about. So Amar Lo. So Aaron says to Moshe, "Mi hey malolu." You know, he hadn't seen his brother. He didn't know his brother got married. No invitations. No Skype. So they had no information about each other. So Aaron sees Moshe with a woman and a child. He says, "Who are these people?" Amar Lo, "Zuhi ishti shenosati b'midyon ve'elu banai." He says, "Oh, Aaron, my brother Aaron, meet your new sister-in-law Tzipora, meet your new nephews." So Amar Lo. Aaron says to Moshe, "Excuse me, Moshe, where do you think you're going with this family?" So Amar Lo, "Mitzrayim. Where do you think I'm going? I'm going to Egypt." Amar Lo, "Al Rishonim Anu Mitzdarim Ve'ata Bo Lahosif Aleihem." Aaron says, "Are you crazy, Moshe? Klal Yisrael suffering in Egypt. They're suffering slavery, hard labor. They're getting killed, and you're taking a family trip to Mitzrayim. You're bringing your wife and your kids to Mitzrayim. Are you out of your mind? You want to add to it? We're already suffering enough. What are you doing?" So Amar La, so he said to her, "Lechi el beis avich, go back. You go." He says to Tzipor, "You go back home." Not la shnei vaneha v'halchala. So she took, you know, I guess cooler heads prevailed, and she went back home to Midian to avoid the hardships of Mitzrayim. You know, but what was Moshe Rabbeinu thinking? You know, it seems like Aaron is like the more responsible one here. You know, Moshe, you're crazy. But what was Moshe thinking?
He thought he was going to go back there to Mitzrayim, make everything better right away.
Well, this is when he first went down to Mitzrayim. Moshe, you know, if you look at the Pesukim, Moshe didn't really have the confidence in going to Mitzrayim in the first place.
Yeah, but doesn't he know when he go back to Egypt, Pharaoh was going to kill him because he knew when he escaped?
Well, God already told Moshe that it was safe to go back. The people who were trying to kill him, so they were dead, whatever, have you ever explained that?
Also, his image got changed, right? Beard and all that stuff.
He wanted to show his children.
So I think that's perhaps what we can glean from Rashi. Again, it's not mefurish, it's not explicit in the Rashi, but it would seem that Moshe is bringing his family back. Maybe this fits along the same lines as the Aruch Chaim was saying, that he wanted to, in naming his son Gershom, he wanted them to connect. You know, it's one thing to say, we're Jews, and somewhere, you know, there are Jews suffering, and we'll live a safe life in Midian, and we'll be happy, and you'll never know from the troubles that the rest of the Jewish people are going through. But you need to, perhaps Moshe was saying, you have to see it. Just the same as I can try to educate you here, and I'm going to try. I'm going to name you Gershom, Ki Amar Ger Ha'isi Beretz Nachriya. I'm a stranger because I miss my brothers who are suffering in Mitzrayim. But Eino Doma Shmiel L'Ri'iya, it's one thing to hear about, it's another thing to take action, to actually see it, to be part of it, to connect. So I think this is the lesson of Moshe Rabbeinu. And we see this, we find this by Moshe Rabbeinu throughout the Torah. Just to bring one example, on source number 5, we're told at the end of the Torah, at the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, the Torah tells us, Oz Yavdil Moshe Shalosh Arim Be'ever HaYarde Mizrach HaShamesh, that Moshe Rabbeinu, so he separated three of the Ari Miklat, three cities of refuge where if somebody killed B'Shogeg by accident, and there was a Goel Hadam, the person who was killed, Kin, wanted to kill this guy, the murderer who killed by accident, so they could actually kill them, unless they ran away to this Ir Miklat, the city of refuge, which was a safe haven. So at the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, he set aside three of these cities. Now there would be more cities once the Jews entered into Eretz Yisrael. But Moshe Rabbeinu still in all wanted to start this mitzvah of separating, of choosing, selecting these three Ari Mikla. And we're told, Lanus Shama, the Pasuk tells us, Lanus Shama Rotzeach Asher Yirtzach Asreyehu, this would be a city where one could run away if he killed somebody by accident. Pivli Das, who Lo sono mitmosul shom, it was totally by accident, he didn't hate him, venasa lachat min ha'arim ha'kel v'chai, and he would go to the city and live. Right? It's easier in the Hebrew, I think, than in this English translation. I didn't really understand what it was saying. But, so the Medrash is tries to figure out why did Moshe Rabbeinu find it necessary to start selecting these three cities before he died. The rest of the cities were going to be selected after they entered the land of Israel. And this mitzvah wasn't even put into place while Moshe Rabbeinu was alive. Why did he have to start the process? So the obvious answer is that Moshe Rabbeinu loves mitzvahs so much that even though he knew it wasn't going to be completed, the selecting of the cities and even the halacha of running away to this Ari Miklat wasn't going to come into effect until they entered into the land of Israel. But he wanted to get a head start because he loved mitzvahs so much. So that's the standard answer. But there's a wonderful medrash in source number 6. The medrash says, medrash in Parshas Veschanan, it says, Ma ra'a Moshe lite nafsho ari miklat. So why did, the medrash asks our question, why did he see a fit? Why did he start dealing with this mitzvah of ari miklat? He wasn't going to see it come into fruition. So Amar Reb Levi, Misha achal es atafshil hu yodea ta'amo. One who eats the food, so he understands. So he understands the taste. So the Medrash explains that Moshe Rabbeinu, so he had killed a Mitzri, whether by accident or not, he killed a Mitzri, and he had to run away to a city of safe haven. He had to run away to Midian in order to save himself from the forces who wanted to kill him for murdering this Mitzri. So he understood the plight and the pain of somebody who had killed B'Shogeg and was facing, he was going to meet his end at the hands of somebody taking revenge. So Moshe understood what this guy who killed B'Shogeg by accident was going through. He understood because he felt the pain of such a person, and he knew what that kind of person needed. He knew that person needed a safe haven to run away to. So that's why Moshe felt that even though, the Medrash says, even though he wasn't going to come into the land of Israel, he wasn't going to come to see this mitzvah of the Ir Mikla come into fruition, still in all, since he was able to connect with such a person, so therefore he was able to take action. So it's a similar idea. Moshe Rabbeinu, so he understood the plight and suffering of those in Egypt. So he understood it. But he wanted to make sure that he was always connected to those feelings. Or just the same as he wanted to make sure he was connected to the feelings of the person who killed B'Shogeg. Therefore, he did this mitzvah. He started the mitzvah of Ir Miklat, even though he wasn't going to see it come to its completion. So too, he always wanted, Moshe Rabbeinu had this philosophy of wanting to connect with his brothers in what they were going through. So therefore, when he's sitting in the safe haven of Midian, and the rest of the Jews are suffering in Mitzrayim, so he names his son Gershom, Ki Omar Ger Ha'isi Beretz Nachriya, because whatever little he can do to connect to the feelings and the pain and the suffering of the Jews, so he'll do that. Whatever little he can do to educate his family to what their cousins are going through in Egypt, so he's going to do that. And even if it means, like the Rashi says, that Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to take his family to Egypt, perhaps to see the pain and suffering of the Jews who were in Egypt. So that tells us what the philosophy of Moshe Rabbeinu is. But it still doesn't tell us exactly why the Torah needs to reiterate the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu named his son Gershom, Ki Omar Ger Ha'isi Beretz Nachriya. We already knew it. So we know Moshe has this feeling when he was living in Midian. So he wanted to name his son Gershom to connect with the suffering. But we're in Parshas Yisro already. The Jews are out of Mitzrayim. But they're about to get the Torah. So okay, so we know who Moshe Rabbeinu's family is. We know Moshe's feelings about his Jewish brothers. So why do we have to, again, why does the Torah have to repeat verbatim that his eldest son's name was Gershom, Ki Omar Ger Ha'isi Be'eretz Nachriya?
Maybe because you don't forget the past. So you put a name for the past so you can remember in generations to come.
Right, so that's a very beautiful idea. I mean, that he shouldn't lose out on that feeling.
Because he saw it when he was in Egypt, the suffering, and then when he escaped, he decided he's going to have to make a move down the road to come back and save his fellow people.
Right, and then he'll remember that. He'll always remember that. So, yeah, so, okay, that's a good answer. Okay, but
it's like today also, don't forget the Holocaust.
Right.
We always,
right, always remember.
Have museums and we teach our children. And
right, but I mean, we do have a lot, I mean, as a question you can ask, we have a lot of things that we remember Mitzrayim. So, was it really necessary?
We do it every year.
What?
We do it every year.
Right, yeah, exactly. So,
so we never forget that for thousands of
right.
years.
So, right, it could be this was a more personal thing for Moshe. He wanted his family to always have that in their name. It could be. But I was thinking more along the lines, a similar approach, but one that's based on the Mishnah and Masechas Avos. And source number 7, the Mishnah and Avos tells us that there are 48 ways, if you want to tap into the power of the Torah, if you want to make the Torah yours,
acquisition,
if you want a prerequisite for acquiring the Torah. So the Mishnah and Avos tells us, G'dol Torah yoser min ha-kahuna min ha-malchus, that Torah is even greater than kahuna and malchus, because shehamalchus nikkes b'shloshe ma'alos, that if one wants to be a king, he has to have these 30 traits. The kahuna be'esrim v'arba, and to be a kohen, you have to have the 24 characteristics or traits. But one who wants to acquire a prerequisite, or one who wants to tap in, wants to ride the Torah train, so the ticket to getting on the Torah, there are 48 ways. 48 ways of getting on the Torah. V'atorah niknis b'arboim u'shmona dvarim. So it's even greater than being a king, than royalty. It's even greater than priesthood. Because there are 48 ways of acquiring the Torah. And one of those 48 ways, the Mishnah tells us, is nose ba'ol im chaveiro. One who shares his fellow's burden, his fellow's yoke.
Like empathy?
Empathy. Yeah. Right, so that's what it would seem like from the Mishnah, is empathizing. And I believe, perhaps based on this, we can understand exactly what Moshe was doing. Moshe Rabbeinu, we know Parshas Yisro. Everyone knows Parshas Yisro is famous for what? For Aseres Hadibros. Klal Yisrael is about to receive the Ten Commandments. We're about to receive the Torah. So the Torah is a, you know, wonderful thing. We thank God for the Torah every single day. But if one really wants to tap into the power of the Torah, you know, we have the Torah. But if one wants to make the Torah theirs, if Moshe Rabbeinu wants to represent Klal Yisrael and go up on Har Sinai and take the Torah on behalf of Klal Yisrael, on behalf of the Jewish people, so he has to be worthy of the Torah. He has to have the 48 ways of acquiring the Torah. And one of those ways is nosei ba'olim chaveiro. He has to be able to empathize, but a step further, he has to show an active desire to empathize with the Jews, with his friends. He has to show that he's willing, that he's always connected to his fellow Jews. So I believe based on this, we can understand exactly what's going on in Parshas Yisro. We're told right at the very beginning of Parshas Yisro that the name of Moshe's oldest son is Gershom, Ki Omar Ger Ha'isi Beretz Nachriya, something we already knew from a few weeks ago, Parshas Shmos. But the Torah is reiterating the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, you know why he's worthy to go up to the Har Sinai? The Torah is telling us a lesson. You want to connect to the Torah. You want to make the Torah yours? So it's a beautiful idea. Nose ba'olim chaveiro. Wow, what a powerful way to connect with the Torah. You want to make the Torah meaningful? So it's not enough just to sit and learn. Certainly a high level. But if you want to really make the Torah yours, if you want to understand and really appreciate the Torah, you want to have a kinyan on the Torah, What a more beautiful way than to be noseh ba'olam chaveru. If I understand what my friend's going through and I share in his pain, and I understand when he's going through a tough time and I'm there for him, so then the Torah really has so much more meaning for me and really has so much more meaning for Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu is the type of person who's noseh ba'olam chaveru, so isn't he the most worthy to go up to Har Sinai and accept the Torah on our behalf? So I believe that's why the Torah, the Yisrael, begins with this lesson of Gershom Ki Omar Ger Ha'isi. Moshe Rabbeinu was always tapped in, and the Torah is telling us a lesson. Always be tapped into the feelings of your brothers and sisters, no matter what they're going through, and then you could be Noseh Be'olam Chaveru, then you could be Kona the Torah, like the Mishnah in Avo says. And I believe this is ideal. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu named his son Gershom, but he kind of had a family precedent for giving this name. You know, this name was kind of in the family already. He just kind of twisted it. The Shelah in Parshas Va'era, source number 8, has a beautiful idea. He tells us that Eila Roshe Beis Avosam B'nei Ruvain B'nei Shimon Ve'Eila B'nei Levi. Eila Shemos B'nei Levi. The Torah in Shemos, the Pasuk in Shemos tells us, in listing off the children of Yaakov B'nei Yisrael who were living in Mitzrayim during the time of Shibud Mitzrayim, during the time of slavery. So it starts listing off some of the tribes who were there and their children. So when talking about Reuven, it says Ela Roshe Beis Avosam, right? Then it says B'nei Reuven. When it talks about Shimon, it says B'nei Shimon. When it gets to the tribe of Levi, it says Ela Shemos B'nei Levi. It specifies these are the names of B'nei Levi. Kasha, says the Shla. That's a question. Lama Amar Tevas Shemos, it's a Levi. Yoser Mimasha Amar B'Reuven V'Shimon. Why is it that when it gets to Levi, when the Torah gets to Levi, so it says Ela Shemos, whereas when it was talking about B'nai Reuven and B'nai Shimon, it just says B'nai Reuven, B'nai Shimon. What's so great about Levi? What is so great about the names of the children of Levi? So explains the Shla. Ha'inyan hu. So this is the idea behind it. Kishevet Levi lo hayu begalus. Really, we know that Levi wasn't included in slavery. Right? There was some bylaws in Egypt that Yosef had put through that the priests would not be subjugated to slavery. No priest, Egyptian, or we know that there were Egyptian slaves also. So whether they were Egyptian or Jewish, and therefore the tribe of Levi, which was the priestly tribe, so they were never subjected to slavery. So the Shla says, Sheva Levi lo hayu begalus. They weren't included in the hardships. The Levi yada davarzeh. Levi understood this. Levi, who was Moshe Rabbeinu's great great grandfather. V'ratza lihishtatif b'tzar satzibur. And Levi, knowing that he wasn't totally part of the Jewish suffering, he saw his brother suffering, he saw his nephews and cousins suffering the slavery, but he saw he wasn't part of it. He wanted to connect with the tzibur. Ma'asa, so what did he do? Kara Shemos Labanov al Shem HaGalus. He named his children names that had to do with the suffering, that had to do with the Galus Mitzrayim. Right? Dahainu Shem Gershon. He named his son Gershon. Levi had a son named Gershon. Not Gershom. Gershom, sorry, but Gershon. With a nun, al shem ki gerim heim ba'aretz lolahem. He named his son Gershon because he understood, he wanted to show his brothers, he understood that they were gerim, that they were strangers, that in Mitzrayim, they weren't totally settled. They were being abused by the Mitzrayim. And he says further, right, that v'shem kahas, he had another, right, Levi had three sons, Gershon, Kahas, and Merari. He had a son, Kahas, al shem shineim kehos, that their teeth were beaten in. V'shem Merari, and his third son was named Merari, al shem v'aymaru es chayehem, that their lives were made bitter. Zehu she'omar ve'ele shemos b'nei Levi. This is what the Shla says. This is why the Torah tells us that Levi, by the children of Levi, it says ele shemos. It tells us that these are the names of the children of Levi, more so than any of the other shvatim.
That they connected with the slavery.
Exactly. He points out mikan yilmod ha'adama, a beautiful lesson of the Shla. From here, one should learn lihishtatif b'tzar hatzibur afal pi she'en hatzar magaslo. That one should always tap in to try to connect to the tsar, to the suffering of the tzibur, even if that pain, even if that tsar doesn't affect him directly, but if it affects the greater tzibur, so you have to try your best to connect to that tsar. Says the Shlal, that's why Levi named his children Gershon, right? Again, you see this name Gershon, Kahas and Merari, because he knew he wasn't suffering. Levi was, was probably not such a pleasant experience being in Mitzrayim at the time, but at least he wasn't subjugated to slavery. So he wasn't suffering, but he wanted to connect. So if he wanted to connect, he connected however he could. He couldn't join them in the trenches. But at least the least he could do, he could name his children, show them, teach them this lesson of connecting to their brothers who were suffering. So perhaps this is where Moshe got this idea from. He saw the name Gershon was already in the family tree, so maybe he changed it to Gershom, just so it wouldn't, you know, cousins can't have exactly the same name. But he got this idea from his, you know, the previous generations of wanting to connect to the sufferings of Klal Yisrael. What a beautiful idea that one can take this active role, going from passivity. Levi was just sitting there in Mitzrayim, and he could have just taken it. He could have even empathized. He could have, you know, you watch the news sometimes, and you see something bad happens in Israel. You see there was another rocket attack on Sderot, and you say, you know, you just say, oy, oy, oy. And like, that's, you know, it's good to feel that pain, but if you don't do something, even a minimal act, so what, you know, how are you tapping into the tsar of the klal? So even if it's a minimal act, it seems like the shlo. I mean, what good does it do? You know, Levi comes to his brothers who are in slavery, and he says, "Oh, you know, I named. You know, I see you're having a really tough time. You know, I named my son Merari because I see it's mar. It's very bitter. So you know, does it actually help them? Does it help them make more bricks? Does it help them build the pyramids? No, it doesn't help them, but it gives them the boost that they know that even though they're suffering, and some people aren't suffering, but even the people who it looks like aren't suffering, at least they're connected. They're with them. We're together in the trenches. I might not be there physically, but I'm there with you emotionally, mentally, spiritually. So I think it's a beautiful idea. This is the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the idea of Sheva Levi. Now, I would say that, you know, it seems like this is a very high level. And it seems like one that you know, you have to be a big tzaddik that Levi was able to understand the sufferings of their Jewish brothers. And Moshe was able to understand the suffering of his Jewish brothers, and he wanted to connect to that the feelings of his brothers, and he wanted to be Nosei Be'olam Chaver, like the Mishnah says.
But Levi came before Moshe?
Yeah, Levi. Levi was one of the sons of Yaakov. So Levi. Wow. So Levi was the first one to come to, you know, one of the first ones to come to Mitzrayim. He was with the Shvatim who came down with the 70, the first 70 people to come down to Mitzrayim. So Moshe is a descendant, is from the tribe of Levi. So Levi was
his forefather,
exactly. So I just found a very similar idea, but one that shows that it's not only the tzaddikim who are attuned to the suffering of their Jewish brothers. So this comes from Parshas Beshalach, source number 9. So it's a really very, very interesting idea that, again, it comes up in the Torah, you see it, and just like Gershom, you see it and you're like, what's it doing here? This is just in last week's Parsha, Parshas Beshalach. We're told that B'nai Yisrael, they finally leave, Vahi Beshalach, Paro Esa'am, that Paro finally sets them free. So Paro sets them free, and they left. All the Jews who... No one wants to stick around in Mitzrayim, right? If you're a Jew in Mitzrayim, you want to get out of there as soon as possible. Vahi b'shach paro asam, they all leave. And we're told that they're traveling, and God doesn't want to take them in the most direct route because he's afraid that that Bnei Yisrael will be afraid because they'll see the Plishtim, they're going to go to war, and they're going to be too afraid, they're not going to want to go to Israel, so he takes them a circuitous route. So we know that they already left. So we pick up, that's the beginning of Parshas B'shach Parakei Gimel. Then, a few psukim later, it ends, we start Perek Yudalit. Right? So you see where it says Aleph, it's a few lines up from where it's underlined. So it says, Vaidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, V'yashuvu v'yachanu l'fnei piachiros, Bein migdol v'ein hayom, l'fnei bal tzifon nilchod tachonu al yam. So Hashem tells Moshe where exactly Bnei Yisrael, again, they're out of Mitzrayim, where exactly they should camp in their journey. V'omar par, and he tells them to do this kind of ruse, in order that Paro will think they're lost in the desert, and Paro will come out and chase them, right? The Omar, so listen to this pasuk. The Omar Paro levnei Yisrael nevuchim heim ba'aretz segar aleihem hamidbar. Does somebody want to translate this pasuk?
Segar,
closed.
It's closed.
No, the entire pasuk.
Where we are?
Where it's underlined. Pasuk Gimel, source number 9.
Well, Parao thought maybe that...
No, just translate. Translate the pasuk.
Well, he's saying that Parao thought the Amar Parao Lebnei Israel that you're going to have the desert coming up on you and you won't be able to continue because you guys are going to die in the desert.
That's not what it says.
But the desert is really like a door.
Just
afraid to go through it.
Just the simple words. Okay, very good. But who is Paro talking to?
Who's Paro talking to?
Yeah.
To Moshe.
No.
Levnei Yisrael.
It says
he's trying to convince him not to go out.
They already left. Vayhi b'shach Paro asam. Klal Yisrael. They're long gone.
Okay, so who is he? If he's talking to Bnei Israel, where are they? They're not there.
So that's the question. Who is Paro talking to?
So
Levnei Yisrael. He's talking to about. Oh, so if you turn to source number 10, so that's what Rashi says.
About. Yeah.
Rashi says, Livnei Yisrael. There's not a chance Bnei Yisrael is still Mitzrayim. The second Chatzos hits, the second Moshe Rabbeinu, Pesach, they're out of there.
They're long gone.
Long gone. Livnei Yisrael, al Bnei Yisrael, Rashi says. He's not talking to Bnei Yisrael, there's nobody left. He's talking about. But if you look to the left, the Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel. The Targum Yonasan explains, this is in Aramaic, excuse me, but he says, Vayomar Paro, who's he talking to? Ludasan Vaviram. Right? So the Targum Yonasan understood that there were some Jews left behind. Two Jews specifically left behind in Mitzrayim. Dasan and Aviram. You know, Dasan and Aviram, the famous two, the biggest Rishonim that Bnei Yisrael had to deal with throughout their journeys in the Midbar. We know Dasan and Aviram, they joined forces with Korach and fighting Moshe. We know Dasan and Aviram, they... the Mun, you know, they tried to trick Bnei Yisrael and show that they couldn't rely on the Mun. Dasan and Aviram are always complaining. They're the ones who ratted on Moshe when Moshe Rabbeinu killed the Mitzri. They were the ones who told Paro that Moshe killed the Mitzri. The two biggest...
They were the two fighting.
The two fighting each other. You know, the two... You know, the usual...
So on which side they were?
So where were they? You know, and this question is compounded by the fact, according to the Targum Yonasan, they're still there. The Medrash says that Chamushim Alumi Bnei Yisrael, that 1/5 of Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim. What happened to the other 4/5? Well, they all died. They died in Makas Choshech. Why? Because they didn't want to leave Mitzrayim. They weren't going to leave Mitzrayim, so God said, better that you should die in Mitzrayim than come out into the Midbar. Right. So it seems like Dasan and Aviram also didn't want to leave Mitzrayim. They stayed behind. So what are they doing still alive? And what are they doing? How do they catch up? How do they catch up to Bnei Yisrael? What exactly happened? Why didn't they die in Makas Choshech? So perhaps you can answer. I saw this idea based on the Maharil Diskin. Rav Yehoshua Leib Diskin was the Rav of Brisk, later in Eretz Yisrael, and a similar idea from Rav Moshe Wolfson, who's the Mashgiach of Yeshiva Tor B'Das, who's currently the Mashgiach of Tor B'Das in Brooklyn, New York. So we often have an understanding of Dasan and Aviram as being, like we say in Yiddish, they're like two big oisfarfs, you know, kind of like separated from everybody else, they're no goodniks. But there's actually... It comes out from a medrash that they did have one redeeming characteristic. We're told, without seeing this inside, but if you look through in source number 11, we're told that Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron, so they come to Paro. Well, they're commanded by God to come to Paro to tell him, let my people go. So they come to Paro. And Paro says, why should I let you go? And they say, well, we want to serve our God. And he says, I don't know who your God is. And Moshe and Aaron, they start doing some, try to convince Paro to let them go. And Paro says to them, I see that you guys want to take... Originally, Moshe and Aaron only told Paro they wanted to leave for 3 days to worship in the desert. So Paro says, I see you want to take a 3-day vacation. Obviously, you're not working too hard. If you feel like you can take 3 days off, so you obviously I'm not working you hard enough. So he tells...
More water.
Right, no more straw. He tells the Egyptian taskmasters, don't give the Jews any more straw, let them provide the straw for themselves. Collect it themselves, and they're going to have to work much harder. So apparently there was a chain, the Psukim tell us there was a chain of command, that Paro had his Egyptian taskmasters, and then the Jews had kind of liaisons between the slaves and the taskmasters. They were the officers of the Jews, but they were Jewish officers. So they took the orders from the Egyptians, and they relayed those messages and orders to the slaves who were making the bricks. So the Psukim say that the the Shotrim, the Nogse Paro, the taskmasters of Paro, come to the Jews, and they say, no more straw. You guys are going to have to provide the straw for yourselves.
For your people.
And they complain. They say, well, you know, it's not fair. We can't do that. So if you see the very bottom of source number 11, Pasuk Yedaled, at least at the bottom of that box, it says, "Vayuku shotre bnei Yisrael asher samo leim nokse paro lemor, madua lo chilesem chochem lilbon kitmol shoshom gam tmol gam hayom." That what happened was the Jews weren't able. The Mitzrim said, "You have to produce the same amount of bricks as you did before, but we're just not giving you the straw. We're not giving you the supplies. You still have to fulfill that quota." And the Jews weren't able to keep up with that quota, so the Mitzrim started beating them. But who do they beat? It says the pasuk in Yudal again, "Vayuku shotre bnei Yisrael," that they beat the officers of Bnei Yisrael. They didn't beat the slaves who didn't get the job done. They beat the officers. And the officers, the Pesukim tell us, they came to Paro, and they complain, and they say, well, you know, it's not fair. What are you doing? Why are you taking advantage of your slaves? It's not fair. You haven't given us straw, and we can't be expected to fulfill our quota. And Paro says, well, you know, it's your fault. You want to take. You have this leader, Moshe Rabbeinu, who's coming here complaining that he wants to take a 3-day vacation. So obviously you're not working hard enough. So, you know, sorry, you guys are just going to have to work harder. So, as they're leaving, as these Shotrim, the Jewish officers, are leaving, so they run into Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is coming back to the palace, and again, the Pesukim say that they complain to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not fair. Thanks a lot, Moshe. Thanks for nothing. And Moshe Rabbeinu is upset, and he says, asks God why he even bothered. But if you turn to source number 12, the last source is a medrash on this parsha. It's a fascinating medrash. It tells us something that we may not have known about who these officers were. This is a medrash that's pointed out by the Maharil Diskin. He says, we begin at the top of the medrash. He says, "Vayuku shotre bnei Yisrael," that the officers of bnei Yisrael were beaten. "Mikan atalumed shahayuk sherim umasru atzma mal Yisrael." That you see from this that the officers they were ksherim, they were big tzaddikim. They were Moser Atzman. Apparently, they didn't have to. They could have just let their Jewish brothers take a beating. But they stepped in. They were Moser Atzman. They went above the call of duty, and they stepped in between the Jews and the Egyptians, and they took the beating. V'savlu makos kedei lahakil me'alehim. They took some of the beatings in order to make it easier for the Jewish slaves who were on the lower level slaves.
The older people also.
Right. And therefore the Medrash says there was Zocha for to various things. There was Zocha to Ruach HaKodesh. There was Zocha to be amongst the Zakenim. But then we turn to the bottom of the Medrash, the last two lines. So the Pasuk says, or the last three lines, "Vayifku bahen shotre Yisrael kishahayu yotzim milifnei paro." The Pasuk says that officers bumped into Moshe and Aaron as they were leaving. "Mahu nitzavim." So Amru Rabu Senuzal, who were included in this group of the Shotrim, there was Dasan Vaviram hayu imahem. Dasan and Aviram were apparently amongst these officers who had stepped in to take the beating on behalf of their Jewish brothers. To lessen the load of their Jewish brothers.
How come?
Because it's this lesson of being Moser Atzman, despite the fact that they were the most evil of the people.
So how come they were...
So perhaps they had this notion that everybody has some notion.
Some good in them.
Some good in them. Some notion of it's connecting to the suffering of their brothers. They're in Egypt with their brothers. They see what they're going through, and they see that their brothers aren't meeting the quota of producing the bricks. They're going to get a tremendous beating, and they're going to suffer tremendously for not being able to produce. So the Medrash says, so whatever they could do to make it a little bit easier, just to step in there and argue on their behalf, or to take a beating on their behalf. So, you know, Dasan and Aviram seemingly had that one redeeming quality about them.
Well, because they were also officers before.
Right.
And they just manage everything, and they had better conditions than the slaves.
Right, so I'm not sure about that.
They didn't have better conditions because the Egyptians held them responsible.
No, but they didn't work.
I don't think they were obligations. Right. They blamed the Shotrei Bnei Yisrael.
Right, but it comes out from the Medrash. The Medrash says that they were Ksherim Umasrim Atzmam. It sounds like from this Medrash they didn't have to. They could have just sat back and, you know, watched, you know, obviously with horror, as their brothers were getting beaten.
Right.
But it seems like from the Medrash, they went above the call of duty, and that's why there was Zocha to reward. And amongst this group were Dasan and Aviram. So it seems like...
They were doing tshuva.
The Maharil, well, it's not even tshuva, because, you know, they were evil in the beginning, they were evil at the end. This is just kind of...
Yeah, in between.
I think say that they didn't have the bitachon in Hashem, that Hashem was going to take care of everything, and certainly didn't have the, you know, Yaminu b'Moshe Avdo, but what they did have was a complete kesher between themselves and B'nai Yisrael.
Exactly.
They were trying to do what they thought was the best way to preserve the Jews, and it wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu killing Egyptians, and it wasn't, you know, what Moshe's program was.
Right, at the very beginning, nobody believed in Moshe. You know, it seemed like he was just causing them more trouble, but it seems like Dasan Aviram, you know, they're evil, they're fighting each other at the beginning, and we know later on, even after they saw the Yad Hashem, they didn't believe in God. Even after it was clear to everybody else, they still didn't believe. So says the Maharil Diskin, they did have this one redeeming factor, that they connected to the suffering of the Jews. They did whatever they could to lighten the burden, to lighten the suffering, even if it meant their own suffering. So he says...
Is this the only positive reference to them?
That I've ever seen. This blew me away. When I saw this in the Sefer, it blew me away. And he suggests, you know, again, not based on any full proof, but he suggests that whereas the other Shotrim, the Medrash says, were zochet, they were rewarded with Ruach HaKodesh, perhaps Dasan and Aviram were rewarded by God, in that he allowed them to stay alive, even though they wanted to stay in Mitzrayim. It seems like everyone who wanted to stay, the Medrash says everyone who wanted to stay in Mitzrayim was killed during Makas Choshech. They were killed, and only one-fifth of the Jews left. Dasan and Aviram were the exception. They were the two who were allowed to stay behind. They were allowed to stay behind.
And weren't killed.
And they weren't killed during the Makas. They also happened to be front-runners, so they saw that, you know, they stayed behind in Mitzrayim, and they see that, you know, Paro and his army drowns in the Yamsuf, so says the Maharil Diskin, after they saw that, they weren't going to stick around in Mitzrayim. The whole empire crumbled, and so they ran and they caught up with their Jewish brothers where they could, you know, create more trouble for Moshe in the Midbar. But he suggests that it's this notion of connecting with, the high level of connecting with Jews in a time of need, connecting with people in a time of need, people who are suffering in a time of need, being Moser Atman, moving from being a passive, just watching something and not, you know, just saying, oh, this is a terrible thing, and actually stepping in and doing whatever you can. So it was Dasan and Aviram stepping in and being Moser Atman and taking a beating on behalf of their Jewish brothers. It was Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, when he was sitting in Midian, naming his child Gershom to show that he was connected to the Jews in Mitzrayim. It was Moshe Rabbeinu trying to bring his family into the powder keg of Mitzrayim to show them exactly what suffering, what it means to suffer as a Jew. And this is the notion of Parshas Yisro, that if one really wants to tap into the power of the Torah, wants to be there, even Dasan and Aviram were at Maimon Har Sinai. They received the Torah also. Why? Because they had this idea, this notion of Nose Be'olam Chaveiro, of stepping in, of moving from passivity to activity, moving from just being a bystander to actually participating, even on a small level. You know, they always say, you know, in YU they have like a... used to have a letter hanging up by the base medrash, like, you know, call the White House, tell them, I think it was from the National Council of Young Israel, saying to, you know, tell them to free Jonathan Pollard, and it has the number to the White House. And you call the White House, and you know you're not going to get through to the president, and you know, but it's that notion of moving.
It's a voice.
Right.
They're voicing.
And besides being a voice, at least you're participating. You're not just standing by and, you know, reading every year, reading again how it's such a terrible thing, how he's just sitting in jail. You're moving from passivity to activity. So, you know, he doesn't even know you're calling, right? The Jews in Mitzrayim didn't know that that Moshe named his son Gershom in Midian. They didn't know that. They didn't know that Dasan and Aviram necessarily were taking a beating. But it's a lesson for them. They're educating themselves that whatever little they can do, you know, even if it just means picking up the phone and calling the White House and saying, you know, tell them to stop shooting rockets at Sderot. You know, I guess the operator doesn't know where Sderot is, and she's certainly not going to relay the message to Barack Obama. But just that action, you know, teaches yourself, you know, educates yourself that I have to be Nose Be'ol im Chaveiro. I can connect with my Jewish brothers. And if we go through that, if we really want to connect with the Torah of Parshas Yisro, the Aseres HaDibros, perhaps this is the lesson of connecting however little we can to our Jewish brothers, wherever they may be.
Well, isn't that got to do with Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha? I mean, you know, you love your friend as you love yourself.
Right, so that's...
I mean, it's all a connection together.
Right, but it's a show that it's also a prerequisite. I mean, that's an understandable that you want to have a connection with you know, it makes sense. But to show that it's also part of the connecting to the Torah, if you want to receive the Torah, if you want that ticket to ride the Torah train, you have to be Nose Be'olam Chaveiro. So it's just that's the lesson at the beginning of Parshas Yisro.
Well, the Torah is obviously the connection with everybody.
Right. Oh, so that's a whole other shear.
Right. Do you have any, I've never gotten a clear answer on this. the original plan was that the Chorot were going to be the
Kohanim.
The Kohanim. Okay, so how was it that the Bnei Levi, hundreds of years before the Chet HaEgel, were somehow singled out as being the Kohanim that didn't get enslaved or weren't placed in the bondage?
So, I mean, you could say there are people who suggest that Reuven already lost his Bechorship when Yaakov took it away from him. So Yaakov, after he switched his father's bed, and Yaakov...
Shimon wasn't any better than Levi in those days.
Right, so... Right, and Shimon wasn't any better, and then so then it got...
Any worse than Levi
right,
in those
oh. Again, I don't remember the source, but I think it said Reuven lost it, then went to Shimon, and then Shimon lost it somehow, and then it got passed down to Levi. So some say that they already had it in the beginning. There's a Meshech Chachma of Meir Simcha Dvinsk, so he suggests that it wasn't only Shevet Levi who was free from slavery. He has a few tribes, and I don't remember what it's based on, but he has in his parish that there's a few tribes who weren't part of the slavery in Mitzrayim. It's interesting, because the Pasuk says as they were leaving Mitzrayim, so Moshe commands them in the mitzvah of freeing slaves. So the question everyone asks is, they don't have slaves. Why is Moshe giving them this mitzvah? Wait till later. Wait till they're about to go into Israel, where they might have slaves, and then they give them the laws of freeing them at the Yovel, freeing them after 6 years. So so the Meshech Chachma says, no. It's a wild answer, but he says that there were some Jews in Mitzrayim who actually owned slaves, who owned Jewish slaves. That they had risen to, they weren't part of the slavery. These Jews, they had risen to some positions of power, and they actually owned Jewish slaves. And Moshe was telling them, before you leave Mitzrayim, you better free your own Jewish slaves, because you're not going to be able to leave if you still have Jewish slaves. So again, I don't know. There are sources that say when exactly Levi became the priestly tribe. This year is assuming that the Shlomo was assuming that Levi already had that.
And almost everybody, many midrashim that assume
that Levi was already considered, right? Okay, thank you very much.
Great.
So again, if you happen to be in KJBS the Shabbos, I won't be insulted if you leave during the speech to go.
And next week.